Chapter 13. Amadiro. 52. Bailey got back to business with a somewhat deeper baritone to his voice than was usual. He said, "Mr. Grimianus, you mentioned the name of the head of the Robotics Institute earlier. Could you give me that name again?"
"Keldon Amadiro."
"And would there be some way of reaching him from here?"
Grimianus said, "Well, yes and no. You can reach his receptionist or his assistant. I doubt that you'll reach him. He's a rather standoffish person, I'm told. I don't know him personally, of course. I've seen him now and then, but I've never talked to him."
"I take it, then, he doesn't use you as a clothes designer or for personal grooming?"
"I don't know that he uses anyone. And from the few occasions when I've seen him, I can tell you he looks it, though I'd rather you didn't repeat that remark."
"I'm sure you're right, but I'll keep the confidence," said Bailey gravely. "I would like to try to reach him, despite his standoffish reputation. If you have a trimensic outlet, would you mind my making use of it for that purpose?"
"Brundage can make the call for you."
"No, I think my partner, Daniil, should. That is, if you don't mind."
"I don't mind at all," said Grimianus. "The outlet is in there, so just follow me, Daniil. The pattern you must use is 75, 30, up 20.
Daniil bowed his head. "Thank you, sir." The room with the trimensic outlet was quite empty, except for a thin pillar toward one side of the room. It ended waist high in a flat surface on which there was a rather complicated console. The pillar stood in the center of a circle marked off on the light green floor in a neutral gray. Near it was an identical circle in size and color, but on the second one there stood no pillar. Daniil stepped to the pillar, and as he did so, the circle on which it stood glowed with a faint white radiance. His hand moved over the console, his fingers flicking too quickly for Bailey to make out clearly what it was they did. It took only a second, and then the other circle glowed in precisely the same way. A robot appeared on it, three-dimensional in appearance, but with a very faint flicker that gave away the fact that it was a holographic image. Next to him was a console like that next to which Daniil stood. But the robot's console also flickered and was also an image. Daniil said, "I am R. Daniil Olivaugh." He faintly emphasized the R so the robot would not mistake him for a human being. "And I represent my partner, Elijah Bailey, a plainclothesman from Earth. My partner would like to speak with Master Roboticist Keldon Amadiro." The robot said, "Master Roboticist Amadiro is in conference. Would it be sufficient to speak to Roboticist Cecis?" Daniil looked quickly in Bailey's direction. Bailey nodded, and Daniil said, "That will be quite satisfactory." The robot said, "If you will ask plainclothesman Bailey to take your place, I will try to locate Roboticist Cecis." Daniil said smoothly, "It would perhaps be better if you were first to..." But Bailey called out,
"It's all right, Daniil. I don't mind waiting."
Daniil said, "Partner Elijah, as the personal representative of Master Roboticist Han Fastolf, you have assimilated his social status, at least temporarily. It is not your place to have to wait for..."
"It's all right, Daniil," said Bailey, with enough emphasis to preclude further discussion. "I don't wish to create delay by a dispute over social etiquette."
Daniil stepped off the circle, and Bailey stepped on. He felt a slight tingle as he did so, perhaps a purely imaginary one, but it quickly passed. The robot's image, standing on the other circle, faded and disappeared. Bailey waited patiently, and eventually another image darkened and took on apparent three-dimensionality. "Roboticist Maloon Cecis here," said the figure, in a rather sharp, clear voice. He had the close-cut bronze hair that alone sufficed to give him what Bailey thought of as a typical spacer look, though there was a certain unspacer-like asymmetry to the line of his nose. Bailey said quietly, "I am plainclothesman Elijah Bailey from Earth. I would like to speak with Master Roboticist Keldon Amadiro."
"Do you have an appointment, plainclothesman?"
"No, sir."
"You will have to make one if you wish to see him, and there's no time slot available for this week or next."
"I am plainclothesman Elijah Bailey of Earth."
"So I have been given to understand. It doesn't alter the facts."
Bailey said, "At the request of Dr. Han Fastolf, and with the permission of the World Legislature of Aurora, I am investigating the murder of robot Jander Panel."
"The murder of robot Jander Panel?"
asked Cecis so politely as to indicate contempt. "Roboticide, if you prefer, then. On Earth, the destruction of a robot would not be so great a matter. But on Aurora, where robots are treated more or less as human beings, it seemed to me that the word murder might be used."
Cecis said, Nevertheless, whether murder, roboticide, or nothing at all, it is still impossible to see Master Roboticist Amadeiro.
May I leave a message for him?
You may.
Will it be delivered to him instantly, now?
I can try, but obviously I can make no guarantee.
Good enough. I will make several points, and I will number them. Perhaps you would like to make notes.
Cece smiled faintly. I think I will be able to remember.
First, where there is a murder, there is a murderer, and I would like to give Dr. Amadeiro a chance to speak in his own defense.
What? Said Cece.
And Grimaeus, watching from the other side of the room, let his jaw drop. Bailey managed to imitate the faint smile that had suddenly disappeared from the other's lips.
Am I too fast for you, sir? Would you like to make notes after all?
Are you accusing the Master Roboticist of having had anything to do with this gender panel business?
On the contrary, Roboticist. It is because I don't want to accuse him that I must see him. I would hate to imply any connection between the Master Roboticist and the immobilized robot on the basis of incomplete information, when a word from him might make everything clear.
You are mad.
Very well. Then tell the Master Roboticist that a madman wants a word with him in order to avoid accusing him of murder. That's my first point. I have a second. Could you tell him that the same madman has just completed a detailed interrogation of personnel artist Santorix Grimaeus and is calling from Grimaeus's establishment? And the third point. Am I going too fast for you?
No. Finish.
The third point is this. It may be that the Master Roboticist, who surely has a great deal on his mind that is of much moment, does not remember who personnel artist Santorix Grimaeus is. In that case, please identify him as someone living on the Institute grounds who has, in the last year, taken many long walks with Gladia, a woman from Solaria who now lives on Aurora.
I cannot deliver a message so ridiculous and offensive, Earthman.
In that case, would you tell him I will go straight to the legislature, and I will announce that I cannot continue with my investigation, because one Maloon Cecis takes it upon himself to assure me that Master Roboticist Keldon Amadeiro will not assist me in the investigation of the destruction of robot Jander Panel, and will not defend himself against accusations of being responsible for that destruction?
Cecis reddened. You wouldn't dare say anything of the sort.
Wouldn't I? What would I have to lose? On the other hand, how will it sound to the general public? After all, Aurorans are perfectly aware that Dr. Amadeiro is second only to Dr. Fastolf himself in expertise in robotics, and that if Fastolf himself is not responsible for the roboticide, is it necessary to continue?
You will find, Earthman, that the laws of Aurora against slander are strict.
Undoubtedly. But if Dr. Amadeiro is effectively slandered, his punishment is likely to be greater than mine. But why don't you simply deliver my message now? Then, if he explains just a few minor points, we can avoid all question of slander or accusation or anything of the sort.
Cecis scowled and said stiffly, I will tell Dr. Amadeiro this, and I will strongly advise him to refuse to see you. He disappeared.
Again, Bailey waited patiently, while Grimaeus gestured fiercely and said in a loud whisper,
You can't do that, Bailey. You can't do it.
Bailey waved him quiet. After some 5 minutes, it seemed much longer to Bailey, Cecis reappeared looking enormously angry.
He said, Dr. Amadeiro will take my place here in a few minutes and we'll talk to you. Wait.
And Bailey said at once,
There is no point in waiting. I will come directly to Dr. Amadeiro's office and I will see him there.
He stepped off the gray circle and made a cutting gesture to Daniil, who promptly broke the connection.
Grimaeus said with a kind of strangled gasp, You can't talk to Dr. Amadeiro's people that way, Earthman.
I just have, said Bailey.
He'll have you thrown off the planet within 12 hours.
If I don't make progress in straightening out this mess, I may in any case be thrown off the planet within 12 hours.
Daniil said, Partner Elijah, I fear that Mr. Grimaeus is justified in his alarm. The Auroran World Legislature cannot do more than evict you, since you are not an Auroran citizen. Nevertheless, they can insist that the Earth authorities punish you severely, and Earth will do so. They could not resist an Auroran demand in this case. I would not wish you to be punished in this way, Partner Elijah.
Bailey said heavily, Nor do I wish the punishment, Daniil.
but I must take the chance. Mr. Grimianus, I am sorry that I had to tell him I was calling from your establishment. I had to do something to persuade him to see me, and I felt he might attach importance to that fact. What I said was, after all, the truth.
Grimianus shook his head. If I had known what you were going to do, Mr. Bailey, I would not have permitted you to call from my establishment. I feel sure that I'm going to lose my position here, and, with bitterness, what are you going to do for me that will make up for that?
I will do my best, Mr. Grimianus, to see that you do not lose your position. I feel confident that you will be in no trouble. If I fail, however, you are free to describe me as a madman who made wild accusations against you and frightened you with threats of slander, so that you had to let me use your viewer. I'm sure Dr. Amadeira will believe you. After all, you have already sent him a memo complaining that I have been slandering you, have you not?
Bailey lifted his hand in farewell.
Goodbye, Mr. Grimianus. Thank you again. Don't worry. And remember what I said about Gladia.
With Daniil and Giscard sandwiching him fore and aft, Bailey stepped out of Grimianus' establishment, scarcely conscious of the fact that he was moving out into the open once more. 53. Once out in the open, it was a different matter. Bailey stopped and looked up.
Odd, he said. I didn't think that that much time had passed, even allowing for the fact that the Auroran day is a little shorter than standard.
What is it, partner Elijah? Asked Daniil solicitously.
The sun has set. I wouldn't have thought it.
The sun has not yet set, sir, put in Giscard. It is about 2 hours before sunset. Daniil said, It is the gathering storm, partner Elijah. The clouds are thickening, but the storm will not actually break for some time yet.
Bailey shivered. Dark, in itself, did not disturb him. In fact, when outside, night, with its suggestion of enclosing walls, was far more soothing than the day, which broadened the horizons and opened space in every direction. The trouble was that this was neither day nor night. Again, he tried to remember what it had been like that time it had rained when he had been outside. It suddenly occurred to him that he had never been out when it snowed, and that he wasn't even sure what the rain of crystalline solid water was like. Descriptions in words were surely insufficient. The younger ones sometimes went out to go sliding or sledding or whatever and returned shrieking with excitement, but always glad to get within the city walls. Ben had once tried to make a pair of skis, according to directions in some ancient book or other, and had gotten himself half buried in a drift of the white stuff. And even Ben's descriptions of what it was like to see and feel snow were distressingly vague and unsatisfying. Then, too, no one went out when it was actually snowing, as opposed to having the material merely lying about on the ground. Bailey told himself at this point that the only thing everyone agreed on was that it only snowed when it was very cold. It was not very cold now, it was merely cool. Those clouds did not mean it was going to snow. Somehow, he felt only minimally consoled. This was not like the cloudy days on Earth, which he had seen. On Earth, the clouds were lighter, he was sure of that. They were grayish-white, even when they covered the sky solidly. Here, the light, what there was of it, was rather bilious, a ghastly yellowish slate. Was that because Aurora's sun was more orange than Earth's was? He said, Is the color of the sky unusual?
Daniil looked up at the sky. No, partner Elijah, it is a storm.
Do you often have storms like this?
At this time of year, yes, occasional thunderstorms. This is no surprise. It was predicted in the weather forecast yesterday and again this morning. It will be over well before daybreak, and the fields can use the water. We've been a bit subnormal in rainfall lately.
And it gets this cold, too? Is that normal, too?
Oh, yes. But let us get into the airfoil, partner Elijah. It can be heated.
Bailey nodded and walked toward the airfoil, which lay on the grassy plot where it had been brought to rest before lunch. He paused.
Wait. I did not ask Grimianus for directions to Amadeira's establishment or office.
No need, partner Elijah, said Daniil immediately, his hand in the crook of Bailey's elbow propelling him gently but unmistakably onward. Friend Giscard has the map of the Institute clearly in his memory banks, and he will take us to the administration building. It is very likely that Dr. Amadeiro has his office there.
Giscard said, My information is to the effect that Dr. Amadeiro's office is in the administration building. If by some chance he is not at his office but is in his establishment, that is nearby. Again, Bailey found himself crammed into the front seat between the two robots. He welcomed Daniil particularly with his human-like body warmth, although Giscard's textile-like outermost layer was insulating and not as cold to the touch as bare metal would have been.
He was the less attractive of the two in Bailey's current chilly state. Bailey caught himself on the verge of putting an arm around Daniil's shoulder, with the intention of finding comfort by drawing him even closer. He brought his arm down to his lap in confusion. He said, "I don't like the way it looks out there." Daniil, perhaps in an effort to take Bailey's mind off the appearance outside, said, "Partner Elijah, how is it you knew that Dr. Vasilia had encouraged Mr. Gromianus's interest in Miss Gladia? I did not see that you had received any evidence to that effect."
"I didn't," said Bailey. "I've been desperate enough to play long shots, that is, to gamble on events of low probability. Gladia told me that Gromianus was the one person sufficiently interested in her to offer himself repeatedly. I thought he might have killed Jander out of jealousy. I didn't think he could possibly know enough about robotics to do it, but then I heard that Fastolf's daughter Vasilia was a roboticist and resembled Gladia physically. I wondered if Gromianus, having been fascinated by Gladia, might not have been fascinated by Vasilia earlier, and if the killing might possibly have been the result of a conspiracy between the two. It was by hinting obscurely at the existence of such a conspiracy that I was able to persuade Vasilia to see me."
Daniil said, "But there was no conspiracy, Partner Elijah, at least as far as the destruction of Jander was concerned. Vasilia and Gromianus could not have engineered that destruction, even if they had worked together."
"Granted, and yet Vasilia had been made nervous by the suggestion of having had a connection with Gromianus. Why? When Gromianus told us of having been attracted to Vasilia first, and then to Gladia, I wondered if the connection between the two had been more indirect, if Vasilia might have encouraged the transfer for some reason more distantly connected, but connected nevertheless to Jander's death. After all, there had to be some connection between the two. Vasilia's reaction to the original suggestion showed that. My suspicion was correct. Vasilia had engineered Gromianus's switch from one woman to the other. Gromianus was astonished at my knowing this, and that too was useful, for if the matter were something completely innocent, there would have been no reason to make a secret of it, and a secret it obviously was. You remember that Vasilia mentioned nothing of urging Gromianus to turn to Gladia. When I told her that Gromianus had offered himself to Gladia, she acted as though that was the first time she had heard of it."
"But, Partner Elijah, of what importance is this?"
"We may find out. It seemed to me that there was no importance in it to either Gromianus or Vasilia. Therefore, if it had any importance at all, it might be that a third person was involved. If it had anything to do with the Jander affair, then it ought to be a roboticist still more skillful than Vasilia, and that might be Amadiro. So I hinted to him of the existence of a conspiracy by deliberately pointing out I had been questioning Gromianus and was calling from his establishment, and that worked too."
"Yet I still don't know what it all means, Partner Elijah."
"Nor I, except for some speculations. But perhaps we'll find out at Amadiro's. Our situation is so bad, you see, we have nothing to lose by guessing and gambling."
During this exchange, the airfoil had risen on its air jets and had moved to a moderate height. It cleared a line of bushes and was now once again speeding along over grassy areas and graveled roads. Bailey noticed that where the grass was taller, it was swept to one side by the wind, as though an invisible and much larger airfoil were passing over it. Bailey said, "Giscard, you have been recording the conversations which have taken place in your presence, haven't you?"
"Yes, sir."
"And can reproduce them at need?"
"Yes, sir."
"And can easily locate and reproduce some particular statement made by some given person?"
"Yes, sir. You would not have to listen to the entire recording."
"And could you, at need, serve as a witness in a courtroom?"
"Aye, sir. No, sir." Giscard's eyes were fixed firmly on the road. Since a robot can be directed to lie by a skillful enough command, and not all the exhortations or threats of a judge might help, the law wisely considers a robot an incompetent witness.
"But in that case, of what use are your recordings?"
"That, sir, is a different thing. A recording once made cannot be altered on simple command, though it might be erased. Such a recording can therefore be admitted as evidence. There are no firm precedents, however, and whether it is or is not admitted depends on the individual case and on the individual judge."
Bailey could not tell whether that statement was depressing in itself or whether he was influenced by the unpleasant, livid light that bathed the landscape. He said, "Can you see well enough to drive, Giscard?"
"Certainly, sir, but I do not need to. The airfoil is equipped with a computerized radar that would enable it to avoid obstacles on its own, even if I were unaccountably to fail in my task. It was this that was in operation yesterday morning when we traveled comfortably, though all the windows were opacified."
"Partner Elijah," said Daniil, again veering the conversation away from Bailey's uncomfortable awareness of the coming storm, "do you have hope that Dr. Amadiro might indeed be helpful?"
Giscard brought the airfoil to rest on a wide lawn before a broad but not very high building with an intricately carved facade that was clearly new and yet gave the impression of imitating something quite old. Bailey knew it was the administration building without being told. He said,
"No, Daniil, I suspect that Amadeiro may be far too intelligent to give us the least handle to grasp him by."
"And if that is so, what do you plan to do next?"
"I don't know," said Bailey with a grim feeling of déjà vu, "but I'll try to think of something."
54. When Bailey entered the administration building, his first feeling was one of relief at removing himself from the unnatural lighting outside. The second was one of wry amusement. Here on Aurora, the establishments, the private dwelling places, were all strictly Auroran. He couldn't for a moment, while sitting in Gladia's living room, or breakfasting in Fastolf's dining room, or talking in Vasilia's workroom, or making use of Grumianus's trimensional viewing device, have thought himself on Earth. All four were distinct from each other, but all fell within a certain genus, widely different from that of the underground apartments on Earth. The administration building, however, breathed officialdom, and that apparently transcended ordinary human variety. It did not belong to the same genus as the dwelling places on Aurora, any more than an official building in Bailey's home city resembled an apartment in the dwelling sectors. But the two official buildings on the two worlds of such widely different natures strangely resembled each other. This was the first place on Aurora where, for an instant, Bailey might have imagined himself on Earth. Here were the same long, cold, bare corridors, the same lowest common denominator of design and decoration, with every light source designed so as to irritate as few people as possible and to please just as few. There were some touches here that would have been absent on Earth. The occasional suspended pots of plants, for instance, flourishing in the light and outfitted with devices, Bailey guessed, for controlled and automatic watering. That natural touch was absent on Earth, and its presence did not delight him. Might such pots not sometimes fall? Might they not attract insects? Might not the water drip? There were some things missing here, too. On Earth, when one was within a city, there was always the vast warm hum of people and machinery, even in the most coldly official of administrative structures. It was the busy buzz of brotherhood, to use the phrase popular among Earth's politicians and journalists. Here, on the other hand, it was quiet. Bailey had not particularly noticed the quiet in the establishments he had visited that day and the day before, since everything had seemed so unnatural there that one more oddity escaped his notice. Indeed, he had been more aware of the soft susurration of insect life outside, or of the wind through the vegetation, than of the absence of the steady hum of humanity, another popular phrase. Here, however, where there seemed a touch of earth, the absence of the hum was as disconcerting as was the distinct orange touch to the artificial light, which was far more noticeable against the blank off-white of the walls here than among the busy decoration that marked the Auroran establishments. Bailey's reverie did not last long. They were standing just inside the main entrance, and Daniil had held out his arm to stop the other two. Some 30 seconds passed before Bailey, speaking in an automatic whisper in view of the silence everywhere, said,
"Why are we waiting?"
"Because it is advisable to do so, Partner Elijah," said Daniil. "There is a tingle field ahead."
"A what?"
"A tingle field, Partner Elijah. Actually, the name is a euphemism. It stimulates the nerve endings and produces a rather sharp pain. Robots can pass, but human beings cannot. Any breach, of course, whether by human or robot, will set off an alarm." Bailey said, "How can you tell there's a tingle field?" "It can be seen, Partner Elijah, if you know what to look for. The air seems to twinkle a bit, and the wall beyond that region has a faint greenish tinge as compared to the wall in front of it."
"I'm not at all sure I see it," said Bailey indignantly. "What's to prevent me or any innocent outsider from walking into it and experiencing agony?"
Daniil said, "Those who are members of the Institute carry a neutralizing device. Those who are visitors are almost always attended by one or more robots who will surely detect the tingle field." A robot was approaching down the corridor on the other side of the field. The twinkling of the field was more easily noted against the muted smoothness of his metallic surface. He seemed to ignore Giscard, but for a moment he hesitated as he looked from Bailey to Daniil and back. And then, having made a decision, he addressed Bailey. "Perhaps," thought Bailey, "Daniil looks too human to be human." The robot said, "Your name, sir?" Bailey said, "I am plainclothesman Elijah Bailey from Earth."
I am accompanied by two robots of the establishment of Dr. Han Fastolf, Daniil Olival, and Giscard Reventlov.
Identification, sir?
Giscard's serial number flared out in soft phosphorescence on the left side of his chest. I vouch for the other two, friend, he said. The robot studied the number a moment, as though comparing it with a file in his memory banks. Then he nodded and said, Serial number accepted. You may pass. Daniil and Giscard moved forward at once, but Bailey found himself edging ahead slowly. He put out one arm as a way of testing the coming of pain. Daniil said, The field is gone, partner Elijah. It will be restored after we have passed through.
Better safe than sorry, thought Bailey, and continued his shuffle till he was well past the point where the barrier of the field might have existed.
The robots, showing no sign of impatience or condemnation, waited for Bailey's reluctant steps to catch up with them. They then stepped onto a helical ramp that was only two people wide. The robot was first by himself. Bailey and Daniil stood side by side behind him. Daniil's hand rested lightly but almost possessively on Bailey's elbow, and Giscard brought up the rear. Bailey was conscious of his shoes pointing upward just a bit uncomfortably, and felt vaguely that it would be a little tiresome mounting this too steep ramp and having to lean forward in order to avoid a clumsy slip. Either the soles of his shoes, or the surface of the ramp, or both, ought to be ridged. In fact, neither was. The robot in the lead said, Mr. Bailey, as though warning of something, and the robot's hand then visibly tightened on the railing that it held. At once, the ramp divided into sections that slid against each other to form steps. Immediately thereafter, the whole ramp began to move upward. It made a complete turn, passing up through the ceiling, a section of which had retracted, and when it came to a halt, they were on what was, presumably, the second floor. The steps disappeared, and the four stepped off. Bailey looked back curiously.
I suppose it will service those who want to go down as well, but what if there is a period where more people want to go up than down? It would end up sticking half a kilometer into the sky or into the ground in reverse.
That is an up-helix, said Daniil in a low voice. There are separate down-helices.
But it has to get down again, doesn't it?
It collapses at the top, or the bottom, depending on which we're speaking of, partner Elijah. And in periods of non-use, it unwinds, so to speak. This up-helix is descending now.
Bailey looked back. The smooth surface might be sliding downward, but it showed no irregularity or mark whose motion he could notice.
And if someone should want to use it when it has moved up as far as it can?
Then one must wait for the unwinding, which would take less than a minute. There are ordinary flights of stairs as well, partner Elijah, and most Aurorans are not reluctant to use them. Robots almost always use the stairs. Since you are a visitor, you are being offered the courtesy of the helix. They were walking down a corridor again toward a door more ornate than the others.
They are offering me courtesy, then, said Bailey. A hopeful sign.
It was perhaps another hopeful sign that an Auroran now appeared in the ornate doorway. He was tall, at least 8 centimeters taller than Daniil, who was some 5 centimeters taller than Bailey. The man in the doorway was broad as well, somewhat heavy-set, with a round face, a somewhat bulbous nose, curly dark hair, a swarthy complexion, and a smile. It was the smile that was most noticeable. Wide and apparently unforced, it revealed prominent teeth that were white and well-shaped. He said, Ah, it is Mr. Bailey, the famous investigator from Earth, who has come to our little planet to show that I am a dreadful villain. Come in, come in. You are welcome. I am sorry if my able aide, roboticist Maloon Cecis, gave you the impression that I would be unavailable, but he is a cautious fellow and is a great deal more concerned about my time than I myself am.
He stepped to one side as Bailey walked in and tapped him lightly with the flat of his hand on the shoulder blade as he passed. It seemed to be a gesture of friendship of a kind that Bailey had not yet experienced on Aurora. Bailey said cautiously, Was he assuming too much?
I take it you are Master Roboticist Keldon Amadiro?
Exactly, exactly. The man who intends to destroy Dr. Han Fastolf as a political force upon this planet. But that, as I hope to persuade you, does not really make me a villain. After all, I am not trying to prove that it is Fastolf who is a villain simply because of the foolish vandalism he committed on the structure of his own creation. Poor Jander. Let us say only that I will demonstrate that Fastolf is mistaken.
He gestured lightly, and the robot who had guided them in stepped forward and into a niche. As the door closed, Amadiro gestured Bailey jovially to a well-upholstered armchair, and with admirable economy indicated with his other arm wall niches for Daniil and Giscard as well.
Bailey noticed that Amadeiro stared with a moment's hunger at Daniil, and that for the moment his smile disappeared and a look that was almost predatory appeared on his face. It was gone quickly, and he was smiling again. Bailey was left to wonder if perhaps that momentary change of expression was an invention of his own imagination. Amadeiro said, "Since it looks as though we're in for some mildly nasty weather, let's do without the ineffective daylight we are now dubiously blessed with." Somehow, Bailey did not follow exactly what it was that Amadeiro did on the control panel of his desk. The windows opacified, and the walls glowed with gentle daylight. Amadeiro's smile seemed to broaden.
"We do not really have much to talk about, you and I, Mr. Bailey. I took the precaution of speaking to Mr. Grimianus while you were coming here. From what he said, I decided to call Dr. Vasilia as well. Apparently, Mr. Bailey, you have more or less accused both of complicity in the destruction of Jander, and if I can understand the language, you have also accused me."
"I merely asked questions, Dr. Amadeiro, as I intend to do now."
"No doubt, but you are an Earthman, so you are not aware of the enormity of your actions, and I am really sorry that you must nonetheless suffer the consequences of them. You know, perhaps, that Grimianus sent me a memo concerning your slander of him."
"He told me he had, but he misinterpreted my action. It was not slander."
Amadeiro pursed his lips as though considering the statement.
"I dare say you are right from your standpoint, Mr. Bailey, but you don't understand the Auroran definition of the word. I was forced to send Grimianus's memo on to the chairman, and as a result it is very likely that you'll be ordered off the planet by tomorrow morning. I regret this, of course, but I fear that your investigation is about to come to an end."